Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connecting Faith live from Studio D at the Strategic Command and Control Center. I'm Bill Arnold, a very approachable and accessible type of radio host, according to my publicist and his staff. Ted Ross at the board. Ted, how are you?
All right, thanks. Feeling good today. How about you?
I'm well, thank you. We're going to talk to David Stark today. He's a virtual juggernaut of Christian perspective and perhaps a one-man think tank. And we're going to talk about a better way to reach millennials with the gospel. Do you know that there's fewer and fewer millennials in your church? They're just the typical evangelism methods are driving them away. And you wonder why.
Because, not working, and we're not speaking their language?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we have to obviously approach them quite differently because of the way they communicate in their world, and they find us less and less relevant to church and what they're hearing in church. So we apparently there's a strategy, and Dave's going to shed some light on how to go about this. So he's written a book. This is not his first, but the book is called Reaching Millennials, Proven Methods for Engaging a Younger Generation.
Look forward to this. Good.
Yeah, and I went through the book, and there's a lot of very interesting things. Kids today and the millennials always communicate via digital media. They're always connecting in with each other. They're always talking to each other. And they will first enter your church door via your website.
That's true. I believe it. Yep. I see my own kids, you know, on their devices all the time.
We check everything out right away on our phones, don't we?
Yeah.
And that's how we first check things out. So we're gonna talk to Dave and figure out what churches want to do and what they want to pay attention to. But I never underestimate the power of the gospel, because when I was growing up in, like, let's just say the 70s, for lack of a better reference point that I have, and I went to a Bible study in high school, and we jammed into the person's basement who could accommodate the most number of kids, and the teaching leader came in, pretty much sat down, said, "Hi, everyone, let's open our Bibles to John chapter 3. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get enough. Mm. We just loved the fact that we were getting God's word fed to us. We didn't need games. We didn't need activities. And, of course, back then we didn't have the distractions of our phones or anything else. So we were all on board to learn about the gospel, and that is the only thing that changes life. So we definitely have a challenge today with millennials.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
And if you have a millennial, you're going to want to listen up today, because Dave is going to help us navigate our way through some of this complexity, for lack of a better word, which I often have is a lack of a better word. I'm always digging for words, Ty. You know, that's the problem. And I was just talking, texting with my friend Todd Mulliken, and he said to say hi to you, Dave. Dave, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, yeah, you're kind of here, but not really.
Invoice,
yeah. So let's talk about your book, Reaching Millennials. And there's barriers that we have to overcome, and we have to build trust, and we have got to do a lot of new strategies with millennials, don't we?
We do. It's trust is the issue now, because what some authors call the disastrous decade, between 1995 and 2005, the millennials either left the church in droves or weren't coming. And so it's time to kind of reset our processes towards trying to engage those generations.
Mm-hmm. So what's step one?
Well, step one for me is about your mindset. And after talking with, you know, dozens and dozens of millennials, and then going back to the scriptures, I realized that Jesus and the apostles had a top priority. Jesus would have called it entering the kingdom. The apostles would have called it believing the gospel. And because it was such a high priority, they treated outsiders in a very specific way. And so step one is understanding that pattern and kind of recalibrating our hearts so that we operate that way towards all outsiders, especially the younger generations.
Mm-hmm. Is there a differentiation, Dave, between trying to engage millennials that once went to church and were part of a church family or ones that have never set foot in a church?
Yeah, there is. Actually, what they both have in common because of what's happened is most of them have a negative backpack on their shoulders when you ask about the church or Christianity. But the ones that have never been to church are not dealing necessarily with as much personal experience of that. And so it's actually easier to start with them because in most cases, mm-hmm. because they don't have that experience that they kind of reacted to.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the millennials and kind of the way in which they have grown up. I mean, they grew up watching things like The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who, by the way, is very funny.
Yes.
But he regularly mocks Christianity. So how do we make an appeal to a grown-up now who grew up on a diet where Christianity was mocked? How do you erase that?
Well, it means that we have to build trust first. And that means, concretely, that we have to build bridges. Bridges of stuff that we have in common. And some of that's doing stuff together, and some of that's learning together, and some of it might be our own transformation together with them, and partnering with them on things. They were marketed to Zinfer Zero. So words are actually cheap for them. But if we can create those bridges, then all of a sudden we have a common ground, and they get to be right up next to us, and hopefully they see grace and not judgment, and they can start to unpack those backpacks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just say church kids grew up going to church, being told pretty much what to believe. They were well schooled, and they mm-hmm. were then released into the wilderness at something called college, and they decided that there was new thinking and new opinions, and they finally had the freedom to decide if they wanted to go to church or not on Sunday, and they chose not to. So there right. starts a path of a downward spiral.
Yes. And in their cases, unfortunately, what got emphasized in many of their backgrounds were the rules. Don't do this, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than focusing on the center, which is that I genuinely know how in my devotional life to experience the love, acceptance, and forgiveness of Christ. When they get to college, if they don't have that center, then all they've got is the rules. And, of course, the rules have been challenged everywhere. And when those things come tumbling down, there isn't a center to go back to.
Okay, but they get to college, and they want more than anything to fit into their new world. They still want to belong.
Yes.
And there is such sharp opposition to any kind of conservative values that they feel
yes.
pressure and they go silent.
Many of them do. Or worse, that really causes them to doubt their whole background. Because you're right, it's a sharper edge these days in colleges relative to belief. That's why drinking from the fountain of the Spirit, if you will, is the thing that will help them survive it because they have a center rather than trying to keep up boundaries that they have no support from.
So there's nothing wrong with, I mean, bringing truth in the form of rules into a person's life because you put up boundaries because you love your kids, right? And they become millennials
yes.
that have a sense of boundaries. They know right from wrong. I don't see how any of this is bad. But they get to college and they decide that I don't really need to go to church when I can maybe just watch the sermon on my phone, stay in my pajamas.
Right.
What are they
missing?
Yeah.
If they actually grew up with connecting to God on their own basis, they now have a place from which the obedience factor in this makes sense because I want to stay connected to the one who loves me.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not, all I've got are the boundaries. And of course, those are being challenged everywhere. And when your social network is where you vet your acceptance, if you will, your belonging, You know, if they're always a mixed group of people, that the authority's not going to be their parents. It's not going to be institutions, because they grew up with institutions that were crumbling everywhere. It's going to be that social network. And so whatever is sort of the baseline there is going to be your baseline.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Dave Stark. He's written a book called Reaching Millennials, Proven Methods for Engaging a Younger Generation. David, you start the book with a very interesting story with a trip you took to San Francisco, where you had lunch with some young leaders. Tell us about that.
So I was actually meeting with a lot of different pastors, but I ended up in the park with a whole bunch of millennials. And
that sounds like the setup for a joke. So I'm in the park with a bunch of millennials.
What did you say?
That sounds like the setup for a joke. So I'm in the park with a bunch of millennials.
Really? And here's the punchline.
Yeah, and the punchline is?
I said I was researching my book. And I said, you know, what do you think about the church?
Yeah.
And immediately the place erupted with negativity.
Ooh.
Most of it around issue A or issue B. One Catholic guy said, you know, I so much wanted to be part of God's army, and for various reasons I'm not because of who the Pope is or something. I just realized how much there was this trust barrier immediately,
mm-hmm.
which means that before we can start talking about Jesus, in many cases, they just want to know, can I trust you?
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, they don't. About 88% of them think we're the against people, against this and against that. And so they see us defined by what we are against rather than what we're for.
Mm-hmm. So were these old people stuck in our ways and not open to new ideas? What do they see the problem as?
I think that they, for them, morality in their lives is very complex. So it's a volatile, uncertain, you know, chaotic, ambiguous world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they constantly see that they see it as morally stronger, Bill, to follow their heart, to go with their judgments in that complexity. And the idea that a single rule in a situation could actually be contextually applied everywhere,
mm-hmm.
is not where they're at all.
Yeah.
I was interesting. I was going to my son's when he went to college. He's a millennial. And I went and sat in on a lecture that was on Socrates and Plato, so I loved it, from one of the professors. And I asked him afterwards, I said, you know, what's different today about students than it was 20 years ago? And he said, well, that's easy. He said, 20 years ago, when I assigned a paper to write about something that they absolutely believed, they had no problem doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when I asked them to do that paper, it's very hard for them to pick a topic. And so they live in this ambiguity. They can see multiple answers on the internet in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that one rule could apply is very hard for them to understand.
Yeah. All right, David, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more with David Stark. We're talking about Reaching Millennials, Proven Methods for Engaging a Younger Generation. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in today for Neil Stavem. Thanks for being with us today. We're so glad you're on board. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in today for Neil Stavem. So glad you decided to spend your lunch hour with us. And if you're one of my friends, this is your breakfast hour, because you probably slept till noon. Anyway, so glad to have you here. We're talking to David Stark today. He's written a book called Reaching Millennials, and we're trying to figure out how to better engage them, because they're kind of, at times, off on their own. And we want to build trust with them. We want to have genuine interaction that draws them back into church life and into a life with Christ. And it seems to me, David, that this generation has grown up, like you said, from age one, being marketed to, and with marketing comes manipulation. So what happens when they start feeling manipulated for people that want to get them to church?
They can smell a mile away.
Oh, they can.
which because authenticity is their deepest value. And so it's very important in our relationships with them is that we're honest about things and that they're much more likely actually to be open at that point. But there are many things that they will attend with you, but it might not be the worship service as the first step. I'll give you a concrete example. I was interim senior pastor down at Prince of Peace Lutheran in Burnsville, and we did Feed My Starving Children down there multiple times. But after the first time, I preached about the fact that this is something that outsiders would like to participate in, especially millennials, as much as we do. So it's a much easier ask of a person around me to say, would you like to come feed starving children with me? Being honest about the fact that it's a church event, and mm-hmm. they know what they're getting into, but... Mm-hmm. We over doubled the number of volunteers the next year after I'd preached about it during the summer. And so there's many things, actually, Bill, that they will do with us. It might not first be the worship service, however.
Yeah. I would say, David, that looking at millennials, they're much more interested in social justice than they are anything else. So I understand why they wanted to go help
Feed
Starving.
Giving back to the world and making a difference, and all those agendas are high on their minds.
Yeah, so the fact that your numbers are big for Feed My Starving Children doesn't surprise me at all.
Right, and that's actually the CEO's told me that somewhere between, I think he said 30 to 35% of all the people who are at the permanent sites are millennials or younger generation. So there's many ways for us to engage in stuff that they will do with us or that we're on one page about, and that's the only way we're going to begin to have those walls come tumbling down a little bit mm-hmm. around trust.
Now let's talk about some of the issues that polarize Christians from the world and some of the issues that are hot potatoes today how millennials in particular they're in the prime of that because that's what everyone talks about.
Mm-hmm.
What are these polarizing social issues do you find rise to the surface the most?
Oh, again, lesbian issue is number one in this. There's not really a close second at the moment.
Okay.
That's by far the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
I think the racial issues come up, but the church has been on the good side of that most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's got to be definitely number one. I would say that fornication would be up there also
mm-hmm.
For a large majority. A lot of them are living together. So those things will be top of mind in terms of things they believe very differently about
mm-hmm.
than some.
But if you're a Christian and you suggest that's not right, you're gonna end up with zero friends, which might be okay too. But it's, you know.
Well, let me give you a little wider perspective, though. Two things. In Romans, Paul was dealing with disputable matters. I'm not saying all those are disputable. I'm just saying, for sake of argument, he was dealing with whether you can drink alcohol or not. He was dealing with whether you can eat meat or have to be a vegetarian, and he was dealing with whether you can worship on one day or worship on another day. And his point was that in these kinds of areas, it's possible for you and I, let's just take alcohol, we could be in opposite places, and both be in the will of God for our lives right now, even if someday we end up in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It goes farther to say, be convinced in your own minds, or you should have a position, but keep it between you and God. It goes on to say, don't pass judgment on your brother and sister, because they answer to the Lord. And the other side is, don't flaunt your freedom that causes your brother or sister to stumble. It even goes farther and says, if I try to pull somebody my direction, even if it's quote-unquote the right direction, I'm pulling them out of their faith, because that which is not a faith is sin. Now, let me apply that for a second. What Paul's saying is state of the essentials. State of the essentials. And for them, that was the concepts that are captured in the Apostles' Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And allow diversity in non-essentials. And that's so half the battle is, are they issues of the law we're talking about disputable or not? And we'll disagree about that. But the other half of the battle is in Acts 15, where they gather to say, how much of the law are we going to require of the outsiders to come to faith? And they debate it. And, of course, James finally says, it's surprising, James says, is that we'll have 642 laws. We're going to require four. We're going to require that you repent from adultery, that you don't eat food sacrificed to idols, that you don't drink, don't eat meat with blood in it, and you don't drink blood directly. And this is his reasoning why. We do not want to make it hard for the outsiders to come to faith.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I see, Bill, is that most Christians don't even think between disputable and non-disputable matters. And then even if it's not disputable, they don't realize that it's not a requirement for the apostles because they didn't want to make it hard. So many of these debates, Bill, we lead with the law.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus and the apostles with the outsiders led with the gospel.
Yeah.
And minimized the law. And that's part of the patterns that we really need to change.
Well, I like that a lot. It's Romans 1:16, isn't it? But the gospel is the only thing that can bring salvation. So
yes, and so it's like saying, how come we're trying to make them, more moral when they don't even know God yet?
Right, that's a fool's errand.
I mean, it's just like, yeah, and so, we've got to lead in our families and our workplaces with the gospel, because it's only when you know the one that loves you, accepts you, and forgives you that you can begin the changes that are involved in sanctification.
Sometimes when I think about this, too, I think of what Jesus said when he said that if the world hates you, understand it hated me first.
Yeah, exactly.
If you were of the world, if you would love, it would love you as its own. Instead, the world hates you because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. So I think that's the battlefield on which we are on. But the whole idea that we love people where they're at, show them grace, show them truth, and show them a genuine interest takes a lot of work, David.
It does.
And who has time? I mean, this is another big issue for people in their everyday life. Sure, I'd like to make a difference in millennials' lives, but I don't have time, and at 8:30 I want to go to bed.
Yeah, I got it. I think it's, I think we're called primarily to the natural relationships around us, Bill. So we have families, we have workmates, we have people that we have common interests with and friends. And so rather than taking that as a big, huge assignment, well, what about Mary? I can pray for Mary. I can do things with Mary.
Mm-hmm.
What about my person who's working out with me? So I really think most of the field of evangelism, if you will, is right around us, as opposed to thinking I'm going to go to an audience that I don't even know.
Mm-hmm. We overcomplicate it, don't we? Sometimes make it way harder than it is and way harder than it was ever intended to be.
You bet.
Yeah.
And if we were able just to lead with love, acceptance, and forgiveness towards the people around us, that's going to have a huge impact.
Yeah. Okay, if you've got a question for David Stark about reaching millennials, give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, maybe we'll have some calls up on the board. We'd love to engage with you on this conversation. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Thanks for being with us today. Bill Arnold in for Neil Stavem, who is on a ridiculously happy vacation. Even though they make us laugh at times, and if you want to reach one, make a YouTube video. They might watch it.
Do you want to hear the girl verse now?
No.
Okay.
No.
Talks about taking selfies and things. So,
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very narcissistic age group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they love themselves, and they have grown up loving themselves. It's difficult because, you've grown up without a lot of adversity or obstacles in as much as they've been part of teams where their team goes 0-14 and they still get a trophy.
Right.
I still think that's going to be a problem later on when they show up to work, and they present an idea to the boss, and the boss doesn't like it, and then they crumble. What do you mean you don't like it?
Right.
So adversity has always been good, and I think as kids are growing up and learning how to even have a sense of humor, they never really lean towards the healthy side because they don't know a lot about it. So, you know, they make cracks about other kids, and that's just them kind of discovering their funny side. They think anyway, and the world would say you're bullying.
Right.
But there is also something that you, when you get pushed one direction, you can push back, and it makes you a better person. Right?
That's interesting theory.
I mean, shouldn't we train kids how to be more resilient, how to let some of that stuff roll off your back and not have it affect you?
A little more well-rounded that way.
I think so, too. So these are some of the head scratchers we've got when it comes to reaching millennials. We're talking to David Stark. He's written a book called Reaching Millennials, Proven Methods for Engaging a Younger Generation. David, I'm wondering if stylistically we have a problem with some of the churches today and the way the pastors present.
Yeah, definitely. I think number one is that the churches that are thriving have paid attention to the communication systems of that where the millennials and the younger generations are. So in other words, they're digital natives, and so the front door of the church, like you said earlier, is the website. But also, they're used to communicating in those sort of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the first important way. The second thing is that this is a group that's the feedback generation. And I don't know if you remember the educational ladder when you're growing up, but it's you only remember 5% of what you hear,
mm-hmm.
and 10% of what you see, and 25% of what you read, but you remember 55% of what you discuss, and 65% of what you create with others, and 95% of what you teach others you remember. And so they grew up in the educational system in their own ways of doing things, in a much more participatory, dialogical factor, which means many of the millennials said to me, you know, what's hard about church? And one woman said, she said, my dad tells me to keep going back, but it's just three songs and a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually foreign in most of their worlds,
mm-hmm.
because they can do that online or they et cetera. But so the more that we engage deeper than that in the worship, the whole experience from getting out of the car to leaving, the better they're going to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's actually higher forms of learning. So it's taking us the right direction if we pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Thriving churches are.
Yeah. David, here's a listener whose name is Todd with two D's. He said, once the millennial does decide to join us at worship, do they feel more comfortable in one style more than another?
Actually, that's a puzzle for this reason, that they love as a group what is prevailing. And what that means is that actually some of the classic traditional churches, liturgy-wise, have been around for hundreds of years anyway, in some cases thousands. And they trust that because it prevailed over that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just traditional, you know, contemporary or even postmodern, but it's they trust something that's solid. So in some cases, that is music, like Eagle Rook does in town, that's cutting edge. And then there's also traditional churches who find that millennials are coming back again. Catholic parishes are seeing this, Episcopal churches, because it's something that they trust. Part of that is we're in the Midwest, and so they're used to that stuff usually by background a little bit. But I've also seen it on the coasts.
Mm-hmm. So
it's not just a matter of this style or that style. It's really, if you can, to understand the millennials around you and kind of what their backgrounds are. So mm-hmm. good to have a focus group with the ones that are already there
mm-hmm.
and talk about that.
So, David, what would you consider to be a particular fear that millennials have when it comes to engaging in faith?
Judgment, number one.
What does that mean?
Hypocrisy, number two. Manipulation is probably number three.
Okay.
Because authenticity is so high to this group, all three of those become deal busters for them.
Mm-hmm.
If we can, never going to completely avoid that, but if we can be real, so they like vulnerability from their communicators,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean voyeurism,
mm-hmm.
but I struggle too. This is hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see that because they know it's true anyway.
Yeah, but is it real, authentic,
also,
or is it manipulative?
Yep, exactly. And they want to see love, acceptance, and forgiveness. They want to hear about relationship, and they love, you know, community is a huge deal to them.
Mm-hmm.
So ways that they can connect to each other, belonging comes first for them before believing.
Mm-hmm.
Churches are structured. You got to believe first, and now you belong, in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those things are part of what the thriving churches are creating.
Okay, so...
And... Go ahead.
I'm just trying to say that we don't have to... I never think we have to dress up the truth for it to be presentable. The truth stands by itself. So if we have to try to make them feel like they belong... Isn't that in itself a little manipulative to try to keep them around so they can eventually hear the truth?
I think there's a lot of ways to preach truth, Bill. It's a very important issue. But the best way to approach it, in my opinion, is first of all, don't assume that the Bible is the authority for them.
Mm.
Which means when you are bringing out truth from the Bible, I believe truth can be supported, because truth is truth,
mm-hmm.
by research that's happening in secular circles, by experiences of others, by stories of where it's been true. That's a much more potent way of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible says does not make it for them, most of them. But if the Bible says, and the psychologists say, and my experience with my brother says, it's got a completely different sound to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so if we're trying to get them interested, and a lot of churches today they all have Wi-Fi now in the building, and I'm curious, if I can come in with my iPad, that also means that if I don't like what's going on in the service, I can kill time pretty easily.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between being connected that way or even using text to communicate them and then having them on in the sanctuary. Those are two different questions in my mind, Bill. Most churches put it in the bulletins or on the screen saying, let's disconnect while we're here.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen churches. I have seen churches once in a while use that in their favor, but it's never keep them on the whole service.
Mm-hmm. So...
Go
ahead, David.
I was just going to say, so the service is usually, digitally quiet.
Okay. So if we're going to try to engage with these millennials, and I'm just a guy that says, what can I do? How can I become more effective? Would you suggest I try to do what?
Well, number one, do I even have them in my world?
Yeah, good point.
My kids? WIC at work, and so that's kind of the first thing. I think the second thing, I would say, but please pray for them to begin with.
Mm, good point.
And I mean, it's really important first step, but mm-hmm. then approach them with a heart that says, I'm not going to make it hard for them to come to faith. So I'm going to lead with love, acceptance, and forgiveness here.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding. Mercy. I want to get to know them. I want to know. I'm not going to start correcting their morality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be in relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
and then I can share authentically with them. What God's done for me, and remember, they're outsiders. The Holy Spirit does not live inside of them,
mm-hmm.
and so consequently. I'm there to, it's good news I'm trying to share with them, not bad news.
Mm-hmm. Jesus would often point out people's sin to them, though, and I'm not saying that we're going to play that role, but to give them a heads up as to the path of destruction they're on, I would think would be part of the discussion.
What's interesting, Bill, is when you look at the Gospels and when Jesus was actually with outsiders, there's 10, 15 texts I know about.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one of them that he mentions sin at all, which is shocking
mm-hmm.
to most people. He sort of does. He definitely does with the rich young ruler. And indirectly he does with the woman at the well, but in that case he's not trying to convict her of sin. He's just trying to point out that he knows things that only he could know.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, it's the Pharisees he's with where he's teaching about the law or the disciples. And so amazingly, you'll see the consistency. So he stays on living water. He stays on the bread of life. He stays on born again. He stays on the things that really have to do with the gospel.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that millennials are fairly obsessed with affirmation and group approval? And so you come in with a radical idea like the gospel, and they're going to naturally have an aversion to this, or are they going to want parts of it to put on their resume? I'll take the social justice part, and I'll go help others.
There's definite parts that they want. So they are on a spiritual journey, Bill. It may or may not include Christianity as any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's big pieces they want. They want community. They want meaning and purpose. They want to give back. They want to make a difference. There's many things that they desire to have that they're finding multiple ways to get. So one thing that's really important is when you hear the spiritual journey of the millennial is don't judge it. Be thankful for the fact that there's any kind of searching going on.
Mm-hmm.
You now have a place from which you can talk about things there. So if I torpedo their spiritual journey, it's game over already.
Right. So look at that as spiritual prompting, that they're actually inquisitive and want to know more.
Yep, and a good example of that, of course, is Cornelius in the book of Acts. I mean, here's a guy who's not a Christian, he's not a Jew, but, you know, he's going after God for all he knows of God.
Mm-hmm.
And how God was pleased with it.
Yeah.
God has, he saw his prayers as an aroma.
I mean,
it's the same thing with outsiders. It's, you know, let's try to understand what journey looks like for them.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk more to David Stark about reaching millennials. If you have a question or a comment, fire away. We'll take it. 1-877-933-2484. Bill Arnold today sitting in for Neil Stavem, and I am so glad you're staying with us today. Thanks. Be back in a minute.
Just because we get around.
We talk about our generations. We're talking about the millennial generation. They are sometimes hard to figure out because they have lots of desire for social justice, but they don't really necessarily want to hear gospel truth. They want a little bit of everything. And David Stark, our guest today, who's written a book called Reaching Millennials, says hang in there with them. Meet them where they're at. Develop truth with them. Trust, and then you will have a deeper relationship along the way. David, you share a great story about Jesus encountering on the road to Emmaus. Would you share that and your perspective on that?
Sure.
And how he treated?
Will do.
Yeah, that was so, and I love that out of your book, which is available for purchase.
Here they are, a couple of discouraged disciples who are walking to Emmaus, and Jesus comes up alongside of them, and it says they don't recognize him. And rather than starting with, hey, I'm Jesus, he starts with a question. So what are you talking about? You know, and of course, then they say, are you the only person in Jerusalem that doesn't know what happened today? Well, he's the only one that really doesn't know what happened that day. But how Jesus came, we thought he was a prophet. And he died, and, you know, the women tell me that he's alive, but we don't really believe the women. And so Jesus listens to this, and then he speaks back to them, probably from Isaiah or something like that, and says, here's what's really going on with Jesus. And so And so he talks about the good news and et cetera. And what's interesting after that, Bill, is he acts like he's going a different direction, like he's got an appointment in another town.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think he did that is he gave them enough. We know their hearts were burning, that they had to choose to say, we want to hear more.
Mm.
So he took it in bite-sized pieces. And so he said, well, stay with us. So he stayed with them. And, of course, around the fire, he breaks the bread. And then they recognize that it's the risen Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stop there. You know, just after he's got their attention, just after, you know, they believe him, he takes off. And the reason I think he takes off is now that they physically, you know, they believe in Jesus, the Holy Spirit is inside of them. That's what the burning is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't need to be there anymore because now Jesus is at the center of their heart. And they literally run back to Jerusalem to talk about it. And it's very tantamount of people being on journeys, Bill. And rather than starting with our answers, we can start with, well, what are you talking about? And that's a variety of things, depending upon who we're in front of.
Mm-hmm.
And as we listen to that, we have a chance to share our own perspective about that, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Bite-sized chunks at a time.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And, and hope. Go ahead.
Let's say I'm a millennial, and I've engaged you, and I all of a sudden think, oh, you're maybe one of these spiritual guys. So I'm going to lead off with a gotcha question. How are you going to deal with that?
Gotcha. So, depending on what the question is, let's say a question of the law, I would go this way. I would say, you know, I can talk about that question if you'd like, but that's not really what the center of Christianity is about. It's really about the love, acceptance, and forgiveness of God because of what Christ did on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I'd be happy to kind of give you my opinion if you really want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's the law, I'm not going to try to camp there. Just like for the Samaritan woman, Jesus didn't try to answer all her questions.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to stay on living water. But so that would be one piece. If ask another gotcha question that's more doctrinal or et cetera. I might say, well, I'll give you my best shot here. But what's interesting is that in knowing God, I don't know everything that God knows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just in relationship with God.
I like and that.
So, see that? So but I can tell you what I do know. And what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is going to surprise them?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't think Christians want to hear what they think.
Yeah. David, you see?
So
oh, I'm sorry.
But hopefully we're staying on the center.
Yeah, keeping the main thing the main thing. So in your book, yeah. David, you make a point of Jesus interacting with outsiders and saying that he models the priority of the gospel. For example, with Zacchaeus, he said, I need to eat dinner with you tonight. I'm coming to your house for dinner.
Right. The guy's a sinner.
Yeah.
Well, he's a big-time sinner.
Yeah.
But it's the acceptance.
Yeah, see, I would say, I'll come to your house for dinner. Depends on what you're having.
Me too. I'm unfortunately a picky eater.
Yeah, see, I am too. So that I already can't be like Jesus in that regard. How about he says to Peter, put down your nets in deep water.
Right. So what's going to speak to a fisherman? I'll tell you, it speaks to him. It's fish.
A big haul.
Especially miraculous fish.
Yeah, a big haul would speak to me. Speaking to the man with leprosy, when he says, are you willing? He says, I am willing. Be clean.
Yeah. There he is, broken. In this case, physically.
Mm-hmm.
And love to him.
Yeah, and of course, the Nicodemus, that encounter in John 3, when he says, you need to be born again. And he was
right.
Being very loving in responding to him. And I love John 3:16, for God so loved the world. You think that's the most globally broadcast verse in the world, but it was a word spoken to one man.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And notice in all of those cases, Jesus is leading with the love, acceptance, and forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you always remind millennials that that's who God is, that's where Jesus meets you, is in your needs. I think that is a good reminder that that's a God who loves you, who offers you grace and forgiveness and mercy, and wants you to be in his family, wants you to be part of his family.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's interesting when I look
because our tendency is so easy to start with the spirit and end with the law. That's not just for non-Christians. That's for us too.
Yeah, yeah. Now I look at the bookend miracles of Jesus. The first one was basically him solving a catering problem at the wedding feast at Cana.
Yeah, he was.
And then before he went to the cross the night in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, the scuffle with Peter where Malchus, his ear gets cut off and Jesus restores his ear. You know, what kind of amazing experience was that for that soldier who never forgot that moment? And have we had a Malchus-like experience where God took something so broken in us and gave us restoration and had us go, I'll never be the same again?
That's exactly right, Bill.
So,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. So we're looking at connecting with millennials. We just have a few minutes left, David. So maybe there are some hints you can give or some advice you can give churches. What should they be doing to try to connect to the younger group? Should they be sending out mass text messages? I mean, how should we be trying to reach them on their level?
Great question, Bill. The whole second half of the book are a whole bunch of ideas and methodologies. And so I'm going to start on a little higher level here with this, and that is I find that every church has different things they're good at. So some people are great at worship. Some people are great at the educational system. Some people are great at small groups. Some people are great at caring. Some people are great at partnering with the community or serving. And so I like to start with churches by saying, what are you already good at?
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, how do we not just do that for people that are inside, but how do we stretch that part of us to the outside?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're already good at it. And so on a strategic level, we're really asking, how can we build bridges
mm-hmm.
with what we're good at out to the culture?
Yeah. And what happens?
And there's many, there's 100 examples in the book about that.
Yeah. And what happens, David, if you want to connect to millennials, but deep in your heart, you feel like Dr. Evil, you know, going, I'm hip, I'm with it. Tucka, 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 tucka.
Well, I think it starts in the heart.
Yeah.
When you realize that God is absolutely number one above everything committed that none would perish,
mm-hmm.
that it so takes priority over everything, I can recalibrate my heart around it.
Mm-hmm. So
that's number one.
Yeah. So let's just walk away by saying we need to start by making sure we have a heart for the lost, and we have to make sure we love the millennial lost and want to engage with them. Mm-hmm. And meet them where they're at and not be annoyed by them because they can do things that are annoying to us, older folk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, the book is Reaching Millennials, Proven Methods for Engaging a Younger Generation. And I think the website is David Stark Collective. Is that right?
No, it's actually represent.com, www.represent.com. The idea is to represent Christianity the way the apostles and Jesus did, but also to represent the gospel to the younger generations.
Mm-hmm. So not to take this lightly at all, this is a big subject because we have a lot of kids out there who are pushing away from the church and the gospel, and we need to pay attention and notice them, come alongside them, share our hope in Christ with them.
Absolutely, Bill.
Yeah. All right, David, thanks so much for being such a great guest.
Well, thank you for having me on the air.
Yeah, you bet. Have a great day. Well, if you want to go to myfaithradio.com, go to Connecting Faith. You can get a copy of this if you didn't catch all of it, because it was an interesting conversation with David Stark. And tomorrow, as parents, we're overwhelmed by our tendency to offer a quick fix rather than offering a thought-out, effective plan for our kids. I'm going to talk to Doug Fields tomorrow, the executive director of Homewards Center for Youth Family. And that's going to be a very interesting conversation. Doug is a very interesting guy. He's been a friend of mine for 30 years, and he's written 50 books. Oh, I'm exhausted thinking about it. Be back in a minute. See you tomorrow.